Hey, got some ideas for a show? Questions? Maybe suggestions? Just email us, mmpets@1320wils.com, or message us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/mmpets. You're only seconds away from totally understanding your pet. All right, maybe not, but you will be smarter. This is the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
It's 9:35, and we're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we've been talking this morning with Patty Strand, who is the president of the National Animal Interest Alliance in Oregon. And Patty, before the break, you were laying out essentially some of the information that came from the study that your organization conducted, specifically what results came from that study and what solutions do you think need to be put into place in order to resolve the issues that it uncovered?
Well, the what we found was that right around 5% of the dogs in shelters were identified by the shelter managers, directors, as being purebred, identifiable as a breed. Obviously, then 95% were not. And where that's significant is that legislatively, the targeting has been at the organized, highly recognizable purebred dog breeding community. I breed Dalmatians, by the way. I have a litter a year. Sometimes I don't have a litter. Every once in a while I'll have two, but averages to one a year for about 46 years. Not a big breeder. And I've been involved with legislation all over the United States, and it targets people who breed dogs. Now, one of the reasons may be that they're just simply kind of the low-hanging fruit. They're easy to identify if they're people who go to dog shows and promote themselves as breeding a particular breed. But the number that is always part of the discussion in these legislative hearings is that 25 to 30% of dogs in shelters are purebreds. So, and we know this isn't true because many of us, even people on our board, have been associated with major shelters. One of our board members is a president of a humane society. I personally worked with an animal control agency for over 20 years, and even 20 years ago, it wasn't anywhere close to that number. So there's a lot of different reasons why that number would come up. One is that maybe the people in the shelter are not experts at identifying, at recognizing what a purebred is. I mean, if it's sort of collie-like, maybe it's a collie. If it's kind of a big dog, maybe 65, 70 pounds, and it's black and short-haired, maybe it's a Labrador. So that's part of it. Another part of it is that, frankly, and this is what's really important to us, is that the information, the data that's available for what shelters and rescues are doing is practically non-existent. As I mentioned earlier in a different segment, it's sort of the Wild West. These are unregulated entities. 20, 30 years ago, when their surpluses were tremendous and the shelters were working around the clock to try to do something to solve this problem, I don't think anybody believed that shelters needed to be regulated. Everybody, in fact, in many cities, many counties and states, they were specifically exempted. But the world has changed, and today we have, as I was mentioning earlier, this huge mass movement of dogs from all over the country and even into the United States from foreign countries for adoption.
So Patty, let me ask this. If the issue is a regulating body, how would that happen? Because it seems like you've got organizations that some of them are municipal, some of them are private. You've mm-hmm. got some like the United States, the Humane Society of the United States, which yeah. crosses multiple bounds. How exactly could that regulating body be set up based on the mismatching of all of the different rescue organizations?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think it would. You know, if you're talking about federal regulation, certainly you could do something that's similar to the Animal Welfare Act and simply say if you're engaged in moving, you know, transactions of X number of animals, and if you conduct yourself in a way that where there's middlemen, for instance, like you have in some of these mass transport operations, they could probably do it that way. The big thing for us is, and I did go down the legislative path, it is one of the things we're interested in, but the big thing is you cannot solve a problem that you can't define, and so the lack of data, the lack of accountability is really the bigger issue for us. And municipal shelters, because they do have to answer to an elected county commission or city council, very often they are at least providing information about the animals that they take in, not necessarily where they come from, but how many dogs, how many cats they take in, how many were euthanized, how many were returned to their owners, how many were ultimately adopted. So some of the municipal shelters are already doing that. And interestingly, most of the shelters, most of the private shelters as well as the municipal shelters actually have software that enables them, and in many cases they're already recording this. They're simply not sharing it with the public. So it's a matter of accountability to the marketplace that they're dealing with. And so we're really data-driven. We want to know what's going on, because you can't solve a problem, and you certainly, as far as some of these public health issues that are developing, you need to know where these animals are coming from in case there's an outbreak of like the flu that recently came in from the dogs from Korea. So anyhow, with private shelters are largely exempt. They do not have to report to anybody but their boards of directors. So that would be different. It would be a separate sort of kind of regulation that you'd be looking at, I think, for private shelters and rescues. Our biggest issue is we want to prohibit the import of rescue dogs from foreign countries immediately. We don't think that until our population problems are solved that it is ethically right, and we think from a public health standpoint it's a ticking time bomb. I don't think most people in the American public realize that literally tens of thousands of dogs are pouring into the country from foreign countries whose veterinary care is not at the level that ours is. So that is something that we would absolutely want to do.
Patty, let me ask this, because it's interesting that you say that, because there's a lot of people in our population that feel the same way about human beings who are pouring in from various countries we don't know where from, with a variety of health care issues. And essentially, the government is responsible for fixing it and choosing not to.
Yeah,
for a variety of reasons. I mean, how do we do it with animals if we can't do it for people?
Well, I think one of the things that is, if these were livestock, if these dogs, by the way, the Egyptian import included cats. Can you imagine any place in the United States that needs more cats from outside the country?
Exactly.
I think over 20 of the dogs in that particular bunch of animals that came in were cats. But we are lucky. The National Association of State and Public Health Veterinarians has said in their rabies compendium, which is sort of their Bible, since 2004, they have urged the prohibition of dogs coming into the United States for adoption or resale to be prohibited from countries where dog-to-dog rabies still exists. And in fact, those are the countries that we have been getting a lot of imports from, and that is where the rabid dogs have come from. And it's just like one dog every year or two, but you have to understand, if these dogs come into, if they mingle with other dogs and somebody doesn't recognize that the dog was sick, rabies takes quite a while to develop.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, a dog can be exposed to it and not come down with it for several months. And what's happening in some of these foreign countries is the dog may have already been exposed, but they're giving it a shot and putting it on an airplane. And just one shot, if you've already been exposed, is not going to prevent the disease from developing. So anyway, number one, we want to prohibit the import of rescue dogs from foreign countries immediately. We think that the same oversight that is imposed on other people in the dog marketplace, whether it's licensing, in many of the states where we have members, there a person has to be licensed if they're transferring more than 24 dogs a year. We think that that is appropriate for entities that are transferring a lot of dogs. They're a bigger part of the dog marketplace than somebody who's just transferring a few dogs a year. And the other thing is we think that, and this is the primary thing for us, is that shelters should be required to report the number of dogs and cats that they take in, what the ultimate disposition of those dogs is, and the source of those dogs, because we're really never going to be able to solve the problem until we understand it. What's happening now is that dogs are just being moved from the south to the north, but as far as we know, the groups that are doing the importing, the vast majority of them, are not putting resources back at the source. So what they're really doing is creating a chain of supply or a pipeline for themselves rather than solving a humane problem.
Right. And
I don't think our group would have much problem at all if a significant amount of effort was being put in at the source so that next year there wouldn't be more dogs in the following year. But it really does. We have this project called the Shelter Project, and you can look at it and see that Colorado is a state that requires pretty significant, pretty detailed reporting by both shelters and rescues. That state imported over 17,000 dogs from rescues and shelters last year.
Wow.
I don't think that that's unusual. I just think that they're reporting it so we know. Michigan, by the way, is further ahead than some states because they do require a level of reporting for the shelters, at least. Now, they don't require the source, which I believe they should. That's the detail that allows us to understand what's happening in the state of Colorado. So they could add that maybe through regulations. I don't even know if they...
Patty, I'm afraid we need to cut you off because we are just out of time.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. For any of our listeners who are interested in more information, is there a website they can go to?
Yes. You go to www.naiaonline.org.
Okay.
And if they have time, click on the Shelter Project button up on the upper right-hand side. There's a lot of data there.
Fantastic. We've been speaking this morning with Patty Strand, who is the president of the National Animal Interest Alliance, and we'll continue right after the break on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com.